RD to study the nutrition of Clostridia, Clostridium spirogenes, and some of the other wound-infecting anaerobic bacteria. And he had somebody working for him on that project. That was aimed at developing better therapeutic management as well as infections.
You were still on the Hayden Fellowship?
Oh no, that was until I got to B12.
Okay, so B12 was paying the way from there on. Was there... you said you had intense discussions with him, or you're sure you did, but you don't recall the nature of him. Was he there a lot? Did he interrupt?
Oh, yeah.
Was he in the lab all the time? So he was not a person who wandered through once in a while.
But not at all.
Intensely involved.
He had a great zest for himself doing the experiments and so on. But I suspect that about that time that I was doing most of the Neurosper experiments. I did the ones on my own or his behest, and he was in his own hands mostly working on the studio. I didn't do any of that.
You said it was a small...
He had a full-time teaching load and so on, and so you know, there, whatever hours he could get.
I guess in those days, financial support wasn't all that great, was it?
I should say. Well, there were the particular constraints that it wasn't war work, and what was your excuse for doing it, and so on. So I was sort of smuggled in. Strangely enough, the Navy was paying for work on Neurospora and recombination, and OSRD was supporting this other stuff.
Did your group interact? I was trying to get a feel for the middle of the war. I'm sure a lot of people were being drafted. What was happening to the other research groups within biology, and what kind of interactions there were?
Yeah. Well, a lot of women came in as graduate students during that time to fill in. It was still a reduction in load. The whole university was being turned to a variety of other projects. A faint inkling that the Manhattan Project was nuclear energy. And to my mind was confirmed when I bumped into Harold Urey going down the stairs one day. Couldn't be anything else from my point of view, but that was just a surmise. They called it the Metallurgical Project, as you may recall. And then training large numbers of, it was taken over by the Navy pretty much, B-5, B-7, midshipmen, and so on. And then still a trickle of undergraduates. It was still a boys' school, so as far as undergraduates were concerned, either was the B-12s in uniform, or a very small number of kids who could get deferments for one reason or another. A few were able to get deferments as pre-meds, that they're going to go straight to medical school, and they could get deferred to do that. They weren't drafting anybody out of medical school at that stage, and that was really wise. But they were then committed to a term of service afterwards, which the services decided unilaterally to turn off. They didn't even want the reserves. Demobilization was pretty complete for 46 or 45. But yeah, these experiments began during that summer, and was pretty momentous as far as the way the war was going. Then in November, I thought they were still going to continue, and that there would be a post-war Navy, and that we'd still have to continue with my service obligations. So it's everybody's expectation. But then rather suddenly, actually, with painfully short notice, a number of people, they decided to demobilize us in November, and that they didn't need us anymore for anything. We weren't going to pay anymore. So we had to scramble to try to figure out where tuition was going to come from and so on. And for some students, there was some GI Bill availability, but it was quite limited if you hadn't, if your only service was in training. I think you had zero or very little eligibility for that, reasonably. So it was quite a sudden turnaround.
What kind of interaction did you have with the chemistry department? Did you have any?
Well, I took a number of courses there. After Stadola, there were a few others. I remember Professor Beckman. I had a minor in chemistry, I think, that's the way it was listed. Yeah, who was the physical organic? It was quite a notable guy. I took one course.
Hammett. Hammett.
Who?
Louis Hammett.
Yeah, that's who it was. Hammett. Right. I did some physics. I had Wills Lamb as my instructor, learning radio, as a matter of fact, electronics.
Well, I know there's something here from the Institute of Radio Engineers. I don't know what the date on it.
Oh, that's a different strand. That's my NASA connection.
Okay.
And, Lloyd Berkner was the president of what was then the IRE. Asked me to sign up. That's the early 60s. And I took a sort of beginning graduate course in physics. I had one course in theoretical physics.
Were you aware of the Manhattan Project, the work that was going on by Urey and his crew?
I only guessed that it was nuclear energy, that was this mysterious classified project for metallurgy. I couldn't imagine what else he'd be doing if it weren't just that. That was my only inkling of it. I now realize Leo Szilard was on campus at the same time, and I got to know him very well later, but I can't remember ever bumping into him. There were large blocks of several buildings that were sealed off.
So yeah, they were working in Havemeyer, I think. Right?
Well, also in Skirmahorn and some in Tupine. There were several areas that were very closely guarded.
I'm not familiar with where you were. The
Skirmahorn is where zoology was.
Okay. Where is that, just my own information, where is that relationship to Havemeyer?
Well, it's just across campus. You have the Havemeyer on the west side and Skirmahorn on the east side.
Okay.
About the same level, it's about 119th Street, I think.
Okay.
Can you excuse me for just a minute?
Oh, of course, certainly.
Yeah, break. I think it was during that summer that I suppose we were anticipating some kind of leave or a vacation period. The schools have been going nonstop throughout the war. Francis suggested that maybe I'd want to pursue this experiment with Ed Tatum. Ed was coming to Yale from Stanford. I was told later by Johnny Moore that one of Francis' motives was to find me a patron who would be more potent in the establishment than he himself was. He thought being an Irish Catholic from New York was sort of next worst to being a Jew from New York, and that we needed something more powerful to be listened to. I was not aware of that at the time as a consideration, but it was Johnny was quite firm in saying that's one of the things that Francis had in mind about sending me to Ed. And I didn't realize then how low on the totem pole Francis was. I mean, he was my god, but he was an instructor and then an assistant professor. And I was at the point of announcing some icon-breaking matters. There's probably some merit that that might not come so easily without a recognized sponsor. but I didn't know that. Anyhow, I at Francis' suggestion, I wrote to Tatum, outlined the experiment that I had in mind to do, and that's all on the record. Asked if there would be an occasion for me to visit his lab, and Francis had smoothed the way for that with him, and Ed arranged a fellowship from the Child's Fund to do that. And so I'd gotten up to a certain point, but I needed a wider variety of mutant strains, and I was starting to make more, but Ed already had a library of mutants that he'd already derived, and so and I was happy to have a chance to be in a different setting, and so it looked like it would all be a good idea. So we did arrange it, history permitted it, and I was able to get there. Was it March or April? I've written it down. And I actually arrived in New Haven and got started. That's 46 now.
Right, somehow that page, here we are. But originally you were still planning to go to medical school.
Yes, this was I was actually still in medical school. I was registered for external research, and my standing at Yale was as a Columbia medical student, as a guest in at Tatum's laboratory. And the thought was I would do that for the spring quarter or semester, presumably spend the summer there and my vacation time as well, and then re-enter the regular annual cycle. I wouldn't have slipped a class. I mean, just my regular class the following fall. So that was the game plan. Now, I don't know how I thought I was going to finance it, but I imagine I had some scholarships coming or available at the school and had some savings. And I think I was earning $50 a month in the Navy, and somehow or another was going to make it. So this job, meantime, also had the advantage I could hope to save a little bit from that and help out the following fall again, too.
When did you realize you wouldn't be going back?
Well, not for some time. The experiments worked out very quickly that spring, and I recounted that detail. I won't repeat it again. So during the summer, wrote and asked for an extension. So after the summer, I was on leave from Columbia, and Ed arranged an extension of my fellowship from the Child's Fund to enable that. And I thought after a year of that, I would go back to medical school, and was planning to pretty much to the end until Ed said, maybe you want to consider an alternative. And that was the job at Wisconsin that had opened up, and he'd come originally from Wisconsin, so he felt pretty close to it, and did look into it, and with a lot of self-examination, decided that that probably was a better thing to do, that since research was what I really wanted, that I could pursue that better by not interrupting the work that I was doing. I still felt quite a wrench about being disconnected from medicine. Madison didn't offer that kind of an opportunity. It was in the ag school. That was an important negative consideration. I ended up repairing it. I had no anticipation that I would be able to, but in 55, 7-8 years later, I did start a department in the medical school at Wisconsin. So that's how it worked out, and then I had to register retroactively as a Yale student for that year when I was really on leave, and had to fork up tuition for that. I remember that very vividly. And the professors all signed up and said yes. Josh was at all our seminars and lectures, and I'd already done the work for the dissertation, so we patched up a Yale PhD out of that experience.
What kind of a group did Tatum have? And did you interact with them?
Oh, yeah. We had, there were about half a dozen people there at Adelberg. A fellow called Rayom. Mrs. Fruton, Topsy. Sophia Simmons was in the lab there with him. Polly Bunting. Her husband had died the year before. She was widowed quite young. She went back to work. She had been a microbiologist, done some work in bacterial variation. So she was in the lab then. She later became President Radcliffe, started the Bunting Center. So you've heard her name and other connections. That was much later on. There were one or two other students. They overlapped different parts of my time there. Charlie Yanofsky came in, I think, the very end of my time, or shortly thereafter. Ralph Lewin, likewise. Those are the main names I remember right now. Mrs. Tatum worked very actively in the lab then, in June. So he was sort of just getting underway. Oh, a fellow called Barrett was there. It was almost entirely a Neurospora lab. I was the only one working on E. coli. Ed never really pushed very hard himself with that. I mean, he'd been a bacteriologist, and the way I reconstructed, he had two medical students at Stanford, one at Gray and Anderson, respectively, that he sort of gave the job of looking for mutants. And that was the beginning of that collection. He didn't talk much about it, didn't seem personally to be that deeply involved. He liked the idea that bacteria might do some of the same things, but he was much more of a biochemist than a geneticist. If you look at the detail of the work he was doing, and he could do all the things he wanted to do very well with Neurospora. And he really enjoyed it. He loved that organism. So that was the division of labor.
When did you know you had the final result? You had written all this.
I've documented that here. I don't remember the dates. I looked them up. So, well, it was pretty early. I spent a lot of time on the controls. I didn't dare do an experiment until I was sure the controls were clean. The last thing in the world I've ever wanted was to have an exciting, provocative result where I would then still be uncertain. So I much prefer to clean up first. I'm willing to wait. Now, there's probative kind of work. If it's not that important and you're trying to figure out what's the best way to do something, I'll do exactly the opposite. I'll do quick and dirty. But when I have what I believe is a critical experiment, I'm sort of scared to do it until I know it's right. I don't want to be caught either with an unwanted disappointment, because I think I don't like the disappointments, but the unwanted is that I hadn't thought of some variable that I should have had right at the very beginning and have to scramble later in order to rescue the experiment. And even worse is one that's contaminated by a misleading result and then be nagged by the idea maybe it's true, maybe it isn't. I find that intolerable, and I've worked very hard beforehand to keep it from happening. Well, I did that here. I spent 2 months on the controls, and then Wemo, the very first experiment with mixed cultures, it was such a clear result, I didn't even really need the controls, but that's just as well. So that was in early June, I believe, late May or early June. It was a month or some weeks before the Cold Spring Harvest Symposium, and it seemed like a very short time, but I must have done a dozen repetitions with different strains and different markers in that month, so I had no doubt there was a phenomenon. And we already knew a lot about it by the time July rolled around. So Ed was already on the program. number of graduate students, including myself, were welcome to attend, and even after we were there, it was problematical whether we were going to say any more about it. But when a number of other people were either saying categorically how awful it was that there was no sex in bacteria, or, well, we have some hints that maybe there's this, maybe there's that, we thought we shouldn't hold back anymore. And Ed asked Emirates if they could just assign a special interval. And we did find some time, and I presented it. Had a long debate afterwards. I've been trying to get some reconstruction of it without very much success. I've circularized everybody, now extant, who was there. I've just one or two replies. Nobody kept any notes. Nobody can even tell me exactly what day it was in that meeting. And oddly enough, I don't have that record. So I could span it to within the interval of 4 days. But
Susan was telling me this morning, she has Cold Spring Harbor Symposia title papers going way back from something. I don't know where she got them from. We'll find that out if it goes back that far.
Well, the American Philosophical Society has Demeritz's records. They do not include the 1946 symposium. So maybe she's referring to that.
Well, let me check anyways.
All right. See. Once again, I'd be delighted.
You know, if she had it, she has it, you know.
It's a mystery what's happened to that particular file, but I've wanted it for another reason, namely, on the reception of Avery, and it's been a tall point in my argument on that, far from being neglected, that, for example, he was invited to present at this symposium, and I'd like to get documentation about who suggested it, the wording for the letter of invitation, and so on. I know that in the actual event, Mac McCarty came instead of Avery. But there was a paper on the Pneumococcal transformation, so you can't sensibly argue, in my view, that nobody was paying any attention to it. But I would have liked some deeper documentation on that point, and that's another reason I lament the absence of that particular file.
What's your sense, since you have very little feedback, what's your sense of the reaction and the discussion?
Well, it was a wonderful opportunity. I mean, I recall the debate pretty well, and there were... LaVoff kept asking, how do you know it isn't just a mixed culture and your prototypes? Because he had worked on syntrophic interactions, and I said, I thought about that. And if it was a mixed culture, then it was a mixture that just didn't know how to separate. And I had indicators like lactose fermentation, so I could spot white and black colonies on EMB media. I didn't have to pick them one at a time, and they were completely homogeneous. I also had selective markers. I had a phage-resistant and a phage-sensitive pair, and they would segregate out. Some of the prototopes were all sensitive, no resistant residuals on this supposed presence of one of the components, others would be too resistant. I couldn't be as confident about the homogeneity. I could certify those to 99.9%. The ones that are totally sensitive, I could certify to 5 decimal places, because I could pick up tiny residuals of resistant organisms. I had verified that by making mixed cultures and so on. So I felt a little put out that one, that they would think I hadn't thought of it, and two, that even after I presented what I thought were very meticulous experiments to answer the point, that they didn't seem to listen. But most people did accept it really very promptly. But my view is, it's been informed by thinking about this with Harriet Zuckerman, about the social dynamics of it, that it was a rare opportunity to be able to make that presentation to the group of movers and shakers, and within the discipline of an organized conference. You know, they were really on their honor to complain or keep your peace, and you don't always have that opportunity, and I could have had all kind of sniping and resistance unfocused if it hadn't been for the occasion to bring it all out. So it was a wonderful confrontation. It was like Pasteur's the meetings that were organized by the French Academy. I didn't appreciate the importance of that at the time. I mean, I was glad to have the opportunity, but it had never occurred to me, what if that hadn't been there? Maybe if I had just dropped this in the hopper and had been published in one of the routine journals, and you know, a lot of people would have thought of all kinds of reasons not to believe it and not had the confrontation that this reflected. So I didn't get... Max Delbruck sort of didn't want to believe it and sort of held out for a long time. I repeatedly, you know, begged him to give some arguments, what's wrong with it, how could these experiments go wrong, and he actually said something very wise, but it was done in a sufficiently abrasive way that I couldn't see through his resistance to where there was some good advice in it. He said, don't bother me with it. Until you worked out the kinetics, it doesn't mean anything. You know, he's a biophysicist, you have to do it in those terms. Well, by kinetics, I thought he meant, what's the yield as a function of the concentration of the inputs? And I had done those experiments. And yes, it's a bimolecular reaction. Now what? I mean, kinetics could have meant the time course of a mixture with interruption, and that's the experiment that Jacob and Bowman did. Of course, that was a very important contribution to understanding it. But it never got resolved in those clean intellectual grounds. That's the only significant resistance of which I'm aware. And most people who were there and were able to experience the debate and the argument adopted it. Luria was very, very positive about it. He was probably the main person who would have had reason to have an opinion on the matter at the time.
Had you realized the importance of the magnitude of the importance of what you had done, the effect it was going to have?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, no, look, this was to the purpose of the experiment was to bring bacteria into the mainstream, and the, behind that was to bring DNA into genetics. So yes, this was the master molecule that was going to be available for further experimentation. I can say that without qualm.